Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins.
Some call it an urban legend.
Why would you do something like that?
Others call it a hoax.
That's just disgustingly gross. I've never heard any humanly thing like that.
It is known as Genkem. The BBC first reporting the vile practice of fermenting human waste to get high by impoverished children in Africa in 1999. Then just last month, a sheriff's department in Florida issuing this bulletin warning its deputies to be on the lookout. It triggered a flurry of talk that swept the nation via the internet. Pundits quick to jump on this bulletin, noting these photos came from someone who admitted he faked the concoction by using flour, water, and beer. While most believe Genkem is a hoax, federal drug agents take it seriously.
Parents need to be aware that kids are calling it by the more popular slang term, butt hash.
You know, here's the thing. In a world of changes, in a world of fluctuations, in a world where nothing is constant, where we live in a constant state of upheaval, where things change every single day, it doesn't seem like you can put your trust in anything. There is no stability. There is no uniformity to life. Butt hash is always funny. Always, always. There's never a day when butt hash isn't hilarious. Excellent. Fantastic. It is 21 minutes after the hour of 1 in this, the month of July, the year of our Lord, 2010. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. This is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for making it part of your daily ritual. It is much appreciated. I am here with Don Taylor. We are high above the Milkpacking District in beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, as we begin another exciting excursion into whimsy and a series of amusements that cannot even be calculated nor appreciated by even the greatest of human minds. Yet we offer them to you here. Not exactly free, but really for less than you'd probably be expected to pay for this sort of thing at one of your more upscale stores on Rodeo Drive. If you would like to join us via the telephone, you can do that. It's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. And you can chat with us live if you like as well at rickemerson.com, the website. At rickemerson.com, the website, rick@rickemerson.com, the email, and then the phone line is open as of, wait for it, now. It's 503-505-6964. And so just now at the top of the show, some of you may have noticed, and if you haven't, this is your alert that it's happening. Some of you may notice that the Rick Emerson Show live stream is now going 24 hours a day. So we get done with the show here usually around, I don't know, 3, a little after. And then we just we go right to the best ofs or the songs or the whatever. There's a whole there's myriad amusements from shows past that are just going on like an endless loop for everybody. Because that's how much Rick Emerson cares, Don Taylor.
And you're giving them great value for their subscription
that's
money this way.
So I'm saying, really, if you were to look at this as being amortized or prorated or a term like that over, you know, if you would look at it as being a 24-hour day, you're really paying like a cent. You're paying tuppence
just
for this program.
A little bit more than a penny an hour.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, really, it boggles the mind that I'm able to do that. And it's because this show is made in China by underfed schoolchildren. So I don't like that to get out, but I mean, we're all friends here, so I could, just between us, I can.
There is, however, no lead in this show.
No, there isn't. It's filled with aspartame, though, and Morgellons. Anyway, moving on. So you may have heard, by the way, that right now there's somebody out there who's just beginning to dig into his ears with a pair of tweezers.
I swear to God, I just read about that for the first time.
Morgellons?
Like day before yesterday.
Oh, it's the best thing ever.
I had never heard of it before. Day before yesterday.
It's awesome. Crazy people are the source of about 98% of my amusement.
Joni Mitchell has it.
Yes, of course.
And so that's how I heard about it. And I looked it up and I was like, oh my God, this is real.
Yes. Yeah, Joni Mitchell claims she has like carpet fibers growing out of her face. All right, let's not get distracted by Morgellons right now. Or fibromyalgia or something. Or Epstein-Barr. or chronic fatigue syndrome. Or a lactose intolerance. Anyway, it's 503-505-6964. But if you've been listening to the live stream after the show ends, you know that it's going 24 hours a day, and we just have a whole bunch of stuff. The way we do it is we basically do an episode of the show, then a song or two, then an episode of the show, then a song, then an interview, then an archive, whatever. So that's all well and good, except the way that the studio is set up, and we really ought to get some photos of the studio. Now that my lovely wife has come in and actually made it look respectable, so that the next time Carl Click is here, he doesn't walk in and roll his eyes like he's wandered into an art supplies closet at an underfunded school somewhere. The way that it's set up, we have multiple computers here that are processing and streaming the show, but it's a long story, and I was about to explain it to you right before we went on the air, and I could see your eyes start to glaze over as I said.
We do, though. We have a mixing board and four computers.
Five. There's actually one back here behind this
curtain.
We
have four just on the table in front of us here.
I mean, this program really is made possible by just really Steve Jobs himself funds this show, I mean, for lack of a better. But it's a long story having to do with me going into Radio Shack yesterday, which is always an awesome experience. And it's awesome, and it's sort of going into Radio Shack is sort of, it's a mixed bag, because I think I speak for a lot of guys when I say that Radio Shack is sort of a glorious, it is like a drive-through, I'll put it with this analogy. Radio Shack is to St. Peter's Cathedral as, Radio Shack is to, I failed altogether on this. I was going to say that Radio Shack is to Fry's as the Little White Chapel in Vegas is to St. Peter's Cathedral. It is a smaller sort of franchised version of a thing that's much more glorious and respectable. But you go into Radio Shack as a guy and you realize I could build anything with the stuff they have here. I could create a nuclear submarine. And you probably could. There ought to be some... Damn it. That's what Radio Shack ought to do, because their obituary is being written all the time by tech bloggers and journalists and the people who are punditized about this sort of thing, that you know the Radio Shack is being outmoded because we live in such a tech-based society that you can get all that stuff everywhere. The people go to, you go down to Walmart and you can buy a lot of computer supplies because computers have really entered the mainstream in a way that they didn't exist, some time ago. And so they say, well, is there really a purpose for Radio Shack? Has it outlived its usefulness? Does it serve a need that no longer really exists, a niche that is no longer a niche? Radio Shack ought to create some sort of Junkyard Wars type show where they get a bunch of nerds and they let them loose in a Radio Shack. Maybe they each get a Radio Shack for like 5 hours and they got to build like a doomsday device or a death ray or a thing that, compacts trash or something.
Radio Shack tried to rebrand themselves.
The Shack.
The Shack.
The Shack.
Like
that,
like they'll be cool now.
And by the way,
I had a tape recorder when I was 10 from Radio Shack, and even then it wasn't cool.
Radio Shack has never been cool. Was that back when it said realistic?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you know the, can you name for me now, Don Taylor, please name one of the other store brands that supplanted Realistic as Radio Shack's own custom label?
I don't believe I can.
The judges would accept Optimod. No, not Optimod. That's a radio processing device. Optimus, I'm sorry. As in Optimus Prime. Also, AudioVox, I believe, is a Radio Shack brand.
AudioVox.
Yeah, Optimod is a radio processing system that costs like $400,000. So by definition, you're probably not going to find it at the Shack. But they ought to do some show where they just put a bunch of nerds into a Radio Shack and they say, look, you got like 5 hours if to build... something that does this. And then they point to a picture on the wall or a job that needs to be done, and you got to do it solely with things at the Radio Shack. And then they give you like one special branded supply or ingredient or device or component or whatever. Here you go.
How is it that no one at Radio Shack has thought of this? Because this is a brilliant idea.
Because they don't ask me to help them out, which is, and really everybody's poorer for that. The point is that as we get ready to start the show every day, because I am lacking an RCA to USB converter, I have one of them and I need two of them. And I went to Radio Shack yesterday to try to get a second USB converter, which is the whole story that I'll get to in just one moment that everybody can identify with. If you're a dude, you've had this happen to you. But because I am short one converter here in the studio, at the top of the show every day, around 1 o'clock or 1:15 Pacific time, if you're listening to us here on the West Coast, whoever, we have to switch computer. It's a long story, but the point is I have to kick everybody off the live stream and restart the live stream from scratch. I basically have to shut it down and start it up again, which is a huge pain in the ass, and it irritates me because I'll look over there and they'll say, you have 79 listeners. And I'll say, well, that's great. Gone. And I have to hit the big FU button and disconnect everybody. I guess I should start coming on the mic and just saying, hey, this is Rick Emerson, and then I just unplug everything. And then it basically has to restart.
And then I get people in the text box going, WTF? Is there no shoe today? People say that it says there's no shoe.
Have you taken my $80 and run to Cuba?
Yeah.
So as of tomorrow, though, I believe that the stream will really be 24 hours in the sense that it's just such a it's like a Greek punishment that the only time I have to actually disconnect everybody is right as we begin the program at the top of the day. So anyway, but I go to Radio Shack yesterday trying to pick up this spare USB to RCA converter. And I had that experience that maybe some of you have encountered, where you're talking to some guy, and let's just have no illusions about this. Much as I love that store, and as much as I've spent thousands of dollars in Radio Shack over the years, that place is like Goon Town. I mean, you could go to any LARPing convention, you could go to any Renaissance fair. You could go to a Fry's booth inside a Renaissance fair where they are sponsoring the LARPing convention, at which the prize is a pewter statue of Gary Gygax. And you are not going to find the parade of freaks that you will find working behind the desk at a Radio Shack. There's this guy. I won't specify the Radio Shack in question because I don't want to embarrass him. But he doesn't appear to have any lips. And it's like, there's a hole in his face that he breathes through. There's something that he shoves food into. But it's like, he's like an alien gray. He's just got these, he looks like Kif on Futurama, where he's just sort of thing all the time, you know. And he's, because he doesn't have, like many lipless people, he speaks like either Barney Frank or Rudy Giuliani. And I walk into Radio Shack, and the other guy trait is to not want any, I don't know if you do this. You don't have a lot of girly traits in some ways, Dawn Taylor. But do you have the aversion to being helped when you go into a store unless you specifically need something?
Yes.
When you walk in and you're like, leave me alone, I will find you if I need something.
Exactly, yes.
And they don't ever listen, though, do they? You walk in and they go, hi, can I help you today? And you go, no, I'm fine, thanks. Okay, well, you know, just so you know, we've got a sale on caulking guns that's going on in aisle 5 right now. And if you get 3 of those, you're going to get yourself either a free paint tin or a free case of stirring sticks and also our hot dogs for 50 cents. And you go, that's great. Please don't talk to me. And also, if you go over to the electrode and diode aisle, you're going to see, just, will you please leave me alone? It's like when the barber's trying to talk to you while you're getting your haircut. So I go to Radio Shack, and I'm looking straight ahead at the floor, which says, hey, I'm here to get fertilizer to blow something up. Don't look me in the eye. You would think that they would know just to leave. Because any number, I would say 30% of the people who go into to Radio Shack are misfit, crazed loners.
Oh, at least 30%.
And they're building something to show everyone how wrong they are.
Or they just want that little adapter plug for that one thing, and they just want to get it
That's
and get the hell
me.
Out.
Get in, you get it, you leave. So I walk in, and the lipless Rudy Giuliani guy says to me, hello, welcome to Radio Shack, can I help you? And I said, no, I'm just getting an adapter. He goes, okay, just so you know, we have all of our palm accessories are 15. Who even knew that palm still existed, by the way? All of our palm accessories are 15% off today. And we have monster cables that are 2-for-1. And I was just like, please, you're embarrassing all of us. Don't speak anymore. now people are texting me about the don't go to Radio Shack. I will solve all your tech needs. Thank you, sir. So I'm looking for the adapter, and you know, and I kind of brush the guy off. But then, of course, what happens as a punishment, my own karma, is that they don't appear to have the adapter. And so I go over and I ask the guy, and I say, I need your help. And the guy, which just pains me, and the guy says, what can I help you with, sir? I said, I need an RCA to a USB adapter, please. And he looks at me and he goes, I'm sorry, you need a double USB. We have double USB adapters right over there. We have the 3-for-1, and if you buy, and I said, no, I need an RCA, which is just two kinds of, it doesn't really matter, they're two kinds of plugs.
Yeah.
I said, I need an adapter from this to this. And he said, I don't think any such thing exists, sir. And I said, of course it exists. I've got one. I use one every day. I need two of them. I've got one, I need a second one. And he said, are you sure you're not thinking of something else? And that was, you don't say that to a guy going into, if a guy is going into a Radio Shack, he knows what he needs.
And if you're asking very specifically, I need an RCA.
Seriously, how would I ever come up with that? How would I ever just fabricate out of my ass? look, I need a secondary version of this thing that doesn't exist, that I've already got at home, you know, one of. If a guy has gone into Radio Shack and has asked for a specific kind of adapter, unless he's reading it to you, like off of a Walmart brochure because he's thinking he can get it more cheap, unless he's clutching an AOL disc,
He probably is smart enough to know what he's asking for.
And whenever you say something and they look at you like that, too, it's as if you asked for, like, I want to hook a garden hose to a watermelon.
Yeah, exactly.
And they just look at you, you can't do that.
Yeah, can I get a baby oven? You know, it's like you're just asking for something that is insane. So I'm going to have to get it online because I can't. But because the other thing is, because goddamn Circuit City went out of business last year, and it's not like I ever spent a lot of money there, but the number of places in Portland at which you can buy office supplies late at night is like zero. I mean, and I can say this now because we're broadcasting here free of corporate interference. I love Fred Meyer. I spend me a lot of money at Fred Meyer. They got like dick in terms of office supplies, computer accessories, what I always need. The stuff that, you know what they've got? You know what Fred Meyer has? They got 15 aisles of labels. You know, labels in every, labels with kittens on them, labels with the pictures of the sun, labels you can put the photograph of like of your wife holding a parasol, labels that are square, labels that are triangle, labels that are glow in the dark, labels that are mentholated. I don't need labels. I need a USB to RCA converter, and no one has one.
Well, if you want to solve your computer problems, Mr. Emerson, let me tell you, go to Free Geek. Check out Free Geek. If people are unfamiliar with Free Geek, it's a nonprofit organization that collects and refurbishes computer equipment, and then they help out nonprofits and they do stuff. But they have this thrift store. You saw me yesterday fiddling with the power
cord. Duct taping. I believe your power cord to your laptop.
I had duct tape on it. I was fiddling. My laptop's like 3 years old, and the plug, the cord right where it's attached to the plug was frayed.
Oh no, see that is the let me just tell you this. That is the weak link in the analog audio world, or in the world of cables and cords anyway. It's right where the cord bends. It's the bendy section of the cord. That is where I can't tell you. I know I'm interrupting your story.
No,
I'll return the control of the show to you in just a second. I can't tell you in my life how many times I would have like a Walkman or whatever, you know, whatever you had on your hip to listen to music, and you stick your headphones in, and they all bend right at that same place, and it bends back and forth like 1,000 times as you walk, and then of course, you know, bend, snap, but it never snaps; it shorts out. So you're listening to Larry King and the Mutual coming up next, Cure for Cancer, and you're like, no. And so I saw you doing that yesterday, and I knew instinctively what you were doing. You were duct taping your cord, trying to get it to work.
Yeah, it's like, if I could just get it to stay in that one position where it works.
Yeah, no.
But then, of course, like the duct tape is like heating up, and I go, oh, that's not good.
It's melting onto your computer.
So last night, I'm at home, and it's shortened out, and it's not working. So I take the duct tape off, because obviously this isn't a good idea. And I plug it back in, and I'm not making this up. I'm not exaggerating this in any way. I plugged it back in the computer. I wiggled it a little bit. A little flame shot up out of it, and then a puff of smoke.
Out of your computer?
Out of the cord. But off of that little place where the cord was frayed.
No, but I mean, in other words, this wasn't like... It wasn't like you had a nuclear accelerator or something. This was the cord that went into your laptop.
Yes.
And a flame shot out of
it. A tiny little flame shot up.
And then, poof,
a little puff of smoke.
What did the smoke even come from? That implies that something is on fire. I mean, that there is a flame, but that something is burning. Something's being consumed.
Yeah. See, and somebody on the text box says that they had this happen and their power cord sparked and exploded.
Wow.
So now...
How could your power cord explode? I thought that only happened in action films.
Well, now I'm freaked out because my computer is my life.
Yes.
You know, it's my work here. It's my work home. It's...
Sister, mother, secret lover.
All of my friends are in the... So, and we had talked about this before when I was looking for a secondary cord, and it was like, it was $70 at Fred Meyer. I live right next door to a Best Buy, so I call the Best Buy, $80, or $90. I call Fry's, $80. I'm just going, God,
Hold that anger for 1 second, I have to see this. We're expecting a guest, let me see if that's who this is. Let me turn off the bumper music here. Hold on a second. Let me just get it out of the way. Hello. Hi. First caller of the day on the Rick Emerson radio program. Sir, madam, as the case may be. With whom am I speaking? Hello. I'm glad I stopped down your story for this. I have never been more glad that I made a choice, Don Taylor. All right. All right, well, thanks so much. All right, thanks for calling. I appreciate it. Rick Emerson appreciates you interrupting the flow of Dawn's story about Free Geek. So, because you had found a power cable that they were selling at Fred Meyer that was $69.
Yeah. And so, it's like Best Buy was $90. fries, it was 80. I call a friend of mine who also has an HP laptop, and he said he has the one for his, but he didn't have a backup. He's like, well, and of course, he's a geek, too. So he's like, well, you can get them online. Mine cost $119.
Jesus,
I'm like, $119? So I realize Free Geek is open till 7. So I hop in the car and I go to Free Geek. I walk into their thrift store with my AC adapter, which is
I can't get over the fact that it cost $119.
For a power
for
cord.
For a cord, for a cable.
Well, they know that you...
They got you over a barrel there. There's just nothing. Let me ask you this about you. You have an HP. Is the cable, and I believe this may be Aaron Mesh, who was on hold from Willamette Week.
Okay.
If that's... But it's okay. I've fixed his little red wagon. He's in the whole box. So Aaron Mesh, if you're listening to me right now, we'll get to you in just a second, because we're going vastly over time. But you know what? That's just hard cheese. Is your laptop, is it done in that way where they screw you by making the power cable have some wonkily shaped plug that won't interchange with anything else?
Yeah, apparently there are any number of AC adapters, and they all have different plugs.
Well, like the iPhone is the best and or worst example of the iPhone or the iPod. That's why none of their accessories, and it's the same with BlackBerry. None of my BlackBerry didn't work with anything else, and the iPod Craft didn't work with anything else. And so you're obliged to pay. Like, how much is this power cord? $700. Well, okay.
So I go to Free Geek. I walk in, and there's this fellow behind the counter, and I show him the AC. I said, I need this. And he pulls a cardboard box out from behind the counter and dumps them on the counter. And there's like 20 different ones, all of them different. And I see one, and I go, well, this looks like... He goes, no, that's not it.
He
immediately knows from like 3 feet away. No, that's not it. I'm like, but they look kind of the... No. So he says, I think I might have one in the back. So he goes off to in the back. So while he's gone, his name is Luis. While he's gone, this other guy who works there, Paco starts talking to me, and he's going, I don't think we can sell you one of those. Because we use... Is that an 18-4?
And I don't know. I just need it to work.
Yeah, because that's the one. We use that one for a lot of our stuff, and we have to buy them ourselves online. And so we don't sell those to anyone. And I'm like, shut up, Paco. So Luis finally comes out, and he's got one in his hand. And I am so happy I could, like, make out with him. And he was kind of cute in a geeky way. But have you ever heard someone say that?
Yes.
There was, I could kiss you.
Yeah.
I have never experienced that before.
But you really wanted to kiss
but
him.
But I was so in love with him at that moment.
Paco, Luis, may I offer you oral favors in exchange for fixing my HP?
So Paco starts telling Luis, like, I don't think we're supposed to sell those. And I'm going, shut up, Paco. Paco's lying. And Luis said, no, there wasn't a sticker on it, so we can sell it. And I was like, so I plug it in, and
you
I plug it into my laptop.
Strangest life.
And it works. And so I'm like, how much? And he said, $20. And I was like, I love you so much.
And that really, you would have given him like a reach around right there if he needed it.
Yes. Right. I loved him so much at that moment.
You should just carry little cards with you that you can hand out where they can redeem them. Now we've got multiple people on hold. Oh, let me just get some of these phone calls here. Hold on a second. Okay. Call. Hey, I didn't know I could put calls on hold with this. Hey, look at that. Learn something new every day. Call on hold. Well, let's find out who this is. Hello, sir, madam, as the case may be. With whom am I speaking?
This is Aaron Mesh.
Hello, Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you, Rick?
I am doing fantastic. Let me just do this. Hold on one second. Let me see if I can... All right. Now, I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to press a button here. Now, realize this is a button that may, in fact, have an unintended consequence. And that unintended consequence may be that you're no longer on the phone with me. Hold on just... Can you hold on one moment, sir?
Certainly.
All right. There you go. That's Aaron Mesh from Willamette. All right. I am picking up now. This is an exciting day for me. I'm figuring out how to take calls off of hold. Hi, I'm 5. It's no wonder the guy at Radio Shack thought I was a retard.
So, yeah, and of course, you wait until a guest is on hold on the phone to do this.
Look,
when something horrible
I'm
could
doing,
happen.
I'm doing the best I can. Hello, sir, madam, as the case may be. Who is this?
Is this me?
Yes, it is, sir. Thank you. Hello. How are you today?
First off, I want to apologize. I was the first call of the day, and when you answered, I just heard nothing, so I assumed I got disconnected.
That's okay. I probably need a different cable to make the calls work properly. Hello, and howdy, sir.
Hello. I just thought, sure, it sounds like Don got a good deal with the cord already, but I wanted to warn that if you go to Best Buy or whatever for a power cord, it'll be $80, thin cord, $10 on, like, Amazon.
Yeah, but see, but here's the problem with that. See, now I'm getting the whole thing. We got to get to Aaron Mesh from the Willamette Week here. We get to speak with Aaron Mesh from the Willamette Week here in a second. But All right. Well, I'll tell you what. All right. I stipulate that you are correct about that. The only reason, promise not to take offense that I am not engaging in a longer conversation with you about it right now, because it is only because I have a guest here that we're going to get to. But realize that you are completely and totally right about that. And on any other day, you and I, sir, would have a long, intense conversation about that, after which we would go out for a beer.
Fair enough.
Okay. Bye now. Okay. All right, that's there you go. Thanks so much for
shiny, a slang term for great use in the television series Firefly and the movie Serenity.
All right, let's welcome
down
to the.
I may have spent $10 more than if I'd bought this on Amazon, but I am also helping a fine nonprofit organization by using
Free Geek's
exactly.
Store. Luis and Paco. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson program from Willamette Week, Mr. Aaron Mesh joining us today. Hello, Aaron Mesh. How are you on this fine? What the hell is it? Is this Wednesday?
This is Wednesday.
It's a Wednesday.
It's a Wednesday. How's life, my friend? Thank you for being patient there. I know you guys are busy over there. Let's just be honest. I'm not that bright. I'm not a smart man in any way. And so just the phone is the most vexing thing sometimes, because I have spent the majority of my life learning how to operate radio station phones. And radio station phone systems, if you've ever been in a radio station, you've been in the air, you've seen these. Radio station phones are not like normal human phones. It's not even really a phone. It's just like a box with a bunch of buttons, and you're never. It takes a while to learn how to use it, but then you sort of you reprogram your brain. And so now that I am on. Now I'm not on a radio station phone, and I'm not on a regular phone. I'm on now a third kind of phone altogether. So every day is like new folds being created in my brain as I attempt to speak to people without inadvertently hanging up on them, or like playing blasts of feedback down the phone or something. So in any event, let's all take a cleansing breath, shall we?
Well, Rick, I work for a newspaper. Technology frightens me.
Well done. Aaron Mesh, many of you, if you read Willamette Week, of course you're familiar with him. He's the screen editor at Willamette Week, and you were on an episode of Outlook Portland recently. They got a lot of great reaction, and we're very fortunate on Outlook Portland. We get a lot of great guests and people who are just, really click with the show in a pretty fantastic way, and you were no exception. It was the first time I think that you had been on the show with us, and I got a lot of people saying that Aaron Mesh, what a hilarious and freshly scrubbed young fellow he is. You ought to have him on more often. So you will have to grace us with your presence on some sort of ongoing basis in the future, sir.
I'd be more than happy to.
I know that there's many, many things and happenings and whatnot happening in the land of Portland, and that you guys at the Willamette are talking about it. So tell the people right now everything they need to know about Willamette Week and what you are offering them by way of information.
Well, this week we have a cover story that I wrote. It's called Soccerland, and it is about first generation immigrants in this country from three different countries, from Mexico, South Korea, and Ghana, watching the World Cup. And I spent a couple weeks watching the World Cup with people who are very different from the Timbers Army.
Now, when you say you spent a few weeks watching the World Cup with these folks, was that here in Portland, or was it was it other cities or other states, or was it just folks that had immigrated here from there?
It's folks here in Portland. Our travel budget is unfortunately very small.
It is your per diem is necessarily finite at Willamette Week.
My per diem is minuscule.
What is the
put it that way?
What is the biggest difference that you found? Because again, I'm not trying to knock Timbers fans, or I'm not trying to knock soccer. It's not like it doesn't matter to me. People can be into whatever they're into. I'm not much of a sports guy, but whatever. It is one of those things where Americans get, I think, a sometimes different or flawed perspective on how something is supposed to be done or how it's supposed to operate by seeing a media depiction of how that is done in other countries. And so we see, and we go, aha, it's all about being drunk and then putting out someone's eye on the train on the way home. What is the difference you saw between the way Portlanders, the native Portlanders respond to soccer and folks from other countries?
Well, I'm not trying to knock Timbers Army either. Let me make that clear to begin with. I know some people in the Army, and they're a lot of fun. What I got that was different from Portland soccer fans' experience generally was that the game for Portlanders, a lot of them, is a novelty. It's something new. It's exciting. It's different. And you go out to a Timbers game, and there's sort of a sense of freshness. And trying something out that maybe to some degree is novel and exotic. And to people who come from countries where soccer is long established, it's not so much exotic as it is life. Well, it's just what they do. It's what they've done for many, many years.
I should actually tell you that. So when I was at Outlook Portland a couple of weeks ago, I was there, and it was an interesting confluence of things. It was, I think, one of the states we were playing. I want to say like Venezuela or Argentina or some damn country. They were playing somebody. There's somebody that beat us, I think, eventually. But I was pulling into the parking lot at the CW Studios in Beaverton, and I get out, and my guest that day was this guy, Bill Carter. And some of you may be familiar with Bill Carter. He made the movie Miss Sarajevo, and he wrote a book called Fools Rush In, which is about how, long story short, he after his girlfriend died, he was hitchhiking the world and ended up just being in Sarajevo at the height of when that city was just, you know, seemed to be on the verge of going up in flames and whatever. But I got out of my car in the parking lot, and I hear this sound coming from somewhere, and it's like a... and I can't figure out what it is. And then I realize it's the blare of a car radio about four spaces down from me. And Bill Carter is down there with his assistant for the day, the guy that was sort of taking him around. And they are leaning in and they are listening to the radio as though a cure for psoriasis is being announced. And he wants to make sure that he can like get it so he can pass it along to his sister in Akron, who's dealt with that problem for many years. And they were, I mean, it was just the look of concentration. And so then I walked into the building. And the creative director at the CW is a guy named Nick Miles, who many of you are familiar with, who is British. And the same thing. It was like he came down the stairs and he's like, "Baby, we're in," you know. And it was because somebody had scored a wicket or something, or somebody had made like three squamishes in one period or whatever the hell the game has going on. But I mean, and I know that America, it's not like the rest of the world has a monopoly on sport, but there was this like sort of crazed glint in the eye about it that you really only see in people that have spent a substantial part of their lives somewhere else, specifically European countries. It really is. And it's even for myself, a non-sports fan, it is kind of a beautiful thing to see, that sort of pure fandom.
It's beautiful and almost a little frightening, actually, simultaneously, because there's so much personal identity wrapped up. There's a sense in which if Ghana loses, the Ghanaian fans feel as if somehow they've failed.
Our crops will not grow at all next year.
Which is a little disturbing to experience firsthand, but at the same time very charming. I don't want to sound condescending, but it is. It's charming in the same way that any sports fan's dedication is charming.
Well,
I'm a Blazers fan, and when the Blazers lose, I tend to go into a little bit of a funk for. And let's be honest, what the Blazers lose every single spring.
And it's funny the way that I sort of view sports. And again, I'm not anti-sports. It's just not an interest. I'm too spindly for that. Even really to lift the remote to watch it is it wins me. But the Anthony Bourdain, of all people, he said this great thing one time. He said that he realized something about himself, and that was that things he found charming or delightful, if they were like in a village outside of Bangladesh, he found to be really obnoxious or trashy in America, and he couldn't figure out. He realized that was a sort of prejudice about himself, and I think I have a little bit of that too, where I will look at certain cities. I'm not saying Seattle and Portland, but the certain cities that will get really, really like aggro about their professional sports teams. And I just look at it and I just sort of shake my head in sort of a sad kind of oh, you Seattle Mariners fans, you're so cute with your, you know, you're caring and you're wanting to win. Whereas, you know, with like Yankees fans, or if you're like a Dodgers fan or a Mets fan, you go like, well, that's fine. It's Americana. That's what that's all about. And I somehow don't allow that in my own backyard. Like, you know, the town where I live, it strikes me as weird sometimes. So, I mean, that is a thing that I got to get over.
Simultaneously, Portland has to get over the idea that we invented soccer. To have the city as a whole catch on to the whole Timbers thing, it would be helpful to stop pretending that it was our idea.
Well, and that's, you know, that is one of those things where it's, and sports are sort of like this. Because sports fans are not unlike music fans in that way, where, you know, when you discover the band on their four-track demo that, like, a guy's, you know, recorded in a basement, like, Xeroxed at the Printmaster, and then you passed it around your circle of friends, or you found it on, you know, he sent you an MP, you found it on MySpace in some dark corner of the web, you have this sense of ownership of it. And then when they, you know, and then when it becomes bigger, or, it's, you know, or you know, they sign to the major label, you have this, you're sort of, you're happy, but you're sort of angry in a way, like, no, but that's ours. It belonged to, it was me. And you're like, you know, you're just some guy sitting at home listening to the CD. You don't really, you're not in the band.
As someone who was a huge geek and a dork as a child, I would like to say I don't appreciate the peer pressure that I feel from the Timbers fans. This sort of like, oh, we are so cool, and we've got scarves. And are you going to the Timbers game? We're all going to the Timbers game. And it just makes me angry.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Well,
that's
it does. Okay.
I'll
just sit back.
It doesn't make me angry. I think that I think one of us in this room, and Dawn Taylor is not the one that I'm referring to. I think one of us in this room has moved beyond any high school induced anti-sports neuroses. Whereas I mean, to me, it just doesn't. The only thing that bugs me about the Timbers is that if I happen to be, and it's always I always mistime this. I'm trying to get anywhere downtown. And it's like before or after one of those games, it's like, forget it. You will never get. It's like trying to get somewhere during. It's like, you know what it is? It's like a starlight parade that happens like every week. But you know, I've talked to Sean Levy from the Oregonian, and he is just, man, you just say, you don't even get out the full phrase. You go, Tim, you know, you just like the first syllable. And it's like, and you can just see all of his batteries amping up inside him as he gets ready just to, you know, to give you this.
Well, like, bloody looking here, mate. I've got 10 stories to tell you about the Timbers, and it's just very exciting.
Yeah, it's
fit for him.
Yeah, the, it's, wow.
I love Sean. I also love razzing him.
Sort of came out of nowhere. That's part of the glory of the Rick Emerson Show. You mentioned early on that when you're sort of watching the World Cup, you listed off a bunch of countries. You know, with you know folks from those places you would watch the game with. You know what I'm talking about. I am obliged to ask, as an American who knows like almost nothing about this. I forget if you said if there was somebody from England there, because England, you know, of course they've got their whole, you know, that's a country where, you know, just based on my limited exposure firsthand to English culture, that there's very much a sense of identity wrapped up in the success of, like, whether Arsenal, you know, goes all the way this year or something. I mean, where do they fall on the in the spectrum, in your opinion?
You know, I actually spent most of my time with first generation immigrants, and so didn't spend as much time with Europeans. But I do know that here in town, English fans tend to gather at the Horse Brass down on Belmont, and there's definitely an identity wrapped up there. They this year the Horse Brass put a bet up with a new bar up on Mississippi Avenue called Prost, based on the outcome of the Germany England match. That if Germany won, the Horse Brass would all wear lederhosen and serve bratwurst, and if England won, that Prost would serve whatever English people eat, which honestly
boiled
I have no idea.
It's just sadness. It's just boiled sadness and fat. That's all it
just
is.
Just boiled beets and sorrow.
It's really what it is. It's whatever they can steal from another. Whatever they manage to steal from one of their colonies, because all of their food is crap. The thing about it, here's, let me just,
whatever they poach from the Lord's land.
or that Scotch egg that they serve at the Horse Brass.
Oh, we are so American.
They, or am I confusing it with the Rose and Thistle? Or do they both serve Scotch eggs? Now I don't even know. In any event. All right. So that is the cover story in Willamette Week, which is on stands now, as they say. You will have to
as
come.
We speak.
You will have to come by and pay a visit to this program. You've been on Outlook Portland again. It was fantastic. Got a lot of comments on it. Will you favor us with your presence here at the Emerson News Network studios one of these days?
I would love to.
Awesome. My people, my person, Cheryl, we'll figure it all out. We would love to have you on. So, everybody, Aaron Mesh, be sure to pick up the new Willamette Week. It is out there right now. He is the screen editor / overlord and a very amusing lad. So, awesome. Thank you. Have a fantastic day, sir.
You too, Rick. Thanks so much.
That is Aaron Mesh, ladies and gentlefolk.
One of our listeners who hails from the U.K., Mentions a couple of things. Football is like a religion in England, for sure. Supporting a team is like being part of a tribe. He also says it is about getting drunk and poking out someone's eye. And he also says, how rich that Rick says that English food is full of fat. Yanks are the fattest bastards on the planet.
No, that's true. But the thing is, I don't even know what I'm trying to say here. It's just that we are unbelievably we're a large people in this country. There's no getting around that. But at least in exchange for that, you're getting to eat something that doesn't just taste like dirt and gristle, that's been wrapped up in like a sort of a poultice of lard overnight. That would just be. I mean, I'm just saying. I don't mean to nitpick or anything. I will put it this way. By and large, and I am not trying to paint myself as some sort of a world traveler or whatever, because everybody knows that wouldn't fool anybody anyway. Everybody knows that is not the case. I am not my wife is the traveling one in the family. I have left the country once, and that was because I'm not saying she forced me to do it, but it was a thing that I agreed to do foolishly like a year in advance, and then I was unable to get out of it. So, but based on the amount of time I spent in and around England and whatever in Scotland, which is not a lot of time, the food I had that was actually really good was food that it was basically just Indian food. When I was saying that they just like went, well, we don't have any spices here. Let's take over a small nation. Oh, India, they've got something. Have you any curry? Fantastic. Kill everyone. Take the curry. Which is because then I would say, you know, well, okay, we've had Indian food, which is. And I have to tell you, I have not been to India. Obviously, it's not like I'm going to go to Calcutta for lunch. But the difference between the Indian food, you know, like say here, for example, which is fine, and in England was just like unbelievable. It was jaw dropping, the difference. But that's again because, you know, I guess when you take over a country for X number of years, you know, you're able to sort of figure out their secrets. So you get a chance to look through the recipe book a time or two. But I said, okay, we've had Indian food like 100 meals in a row. Let's get something that's sort of authentically British. Mistake. Wrong. I can't tell you how wrong that was. Because it really was. When he said it was just like beets and pain, I mean, that is not too far off. I eventually ended up just saying, I'll just eat this square of brie that's sitting in the corner of the plate and shove everything around so it looks like I've eaten it. It was just bad. It was bad. It was not good in any way. So, you know, God bless them. It's just they can do a lot of things in England. Cooking their own food, creating their own food, not one of them, and so forth. All right. So there you go. So we're fat, but you know what? We got.
But rightfully so.
We got Cheetos. So, yeah. I mean, it's all. We got Cheetos. We got Gardettos. I got the Kraft macaroni. And we didn't get a chance to do the what I did last night because you were talking about your free geek thing.
Oh, yeah.
Was there anything else to your free geek story once you got past giving a massage to Paco and Felipe?
No, that was pretty much it. Me standing there in just abject adoration and appreciation of the fact that this guy. I said you probably hear this from people who come in here for things,
but you
saved my life. And he said, no, not really. People don't actually say that. He was very charming and like I said, quite adorable.
No,
but he did look sort of taken aback by, you know, how avid I was.
Did you actually say I could make out with you?
No, I didn't.
Okay. I was wondering if that was the sort of thing you just thought in your head.
I just thought that. Well, also, I was with my husband. So,
yeah,
I don't usually tell people, I could make out with you right now when my husband's standing there.
Oh, I see.
Okay, I don't usually say that to people ever.
I was
really.
Going to say, it's not. Is it one of those as long as, you know, it's a, like a don't ask, don't tell kind of a thing?
And honestly, like I said before, I have heard that phrase my entire life when somebody says, I could kiss you. And I've never experienced that. That feeling that, like, well, I could actually just reach up and plant a kiss on someone's lips because I'm so happy right now.
Just to recap this story, because Free Geek really is a pretty awesome place if you all don't know about it. The average cost for a new cable for your HP laptop would have been what?
About $80.
Okay. You paid what at Free Geek?
$20.
Okay. And you walked in and they just had one.
Yeah, he had to go back in the back and look for one.
But how great is that when they come out with exactly, they go, I got one right here. And you go, that's the weight of enormous proportions. It's been lifted off my shoulders.
And they have all kinds, if you need, like, they actually have peripherals and used computers and stuff like that. But honestly, if you need, like, power supplies or plugs or any of that stuff, they have tons of that stuff there. And it's all sold out of the thrift store as a way of helping to support the good work that they do elsewhere.
There are few better feelings than when you go into a place and they have exactly what you need and they go, I got one right here. And it's much cheaper than you thought it was. Here you go. As opposed to me going in the Radio Shack yesterday, which is where I said, I need an RCA to USB adapter. And the guy said, that doesn't exist, essentially. He was more polite about it, but he was telling me I was making it up.
And you just wanted to punch him, didn't you?
Yeah, and I was just going to be like, you know, you bastard, I'm going to take you back and set you on fire. So now I have to buy the thing off the internet, which is okay, and it's cheaper. But, you know, but I'm an American. I want it now.
Yeah.
That's to be an American is to want it now.
And with this thing, with the power thing, I needed it now because I was thinking, well, crap, you know, I could spend the evening. I had to call an editor and say I can't get my story done right now.
Oh, no, you don't realize.
But I just was also thinking, if I don't get this now, I can't work tomorrow.
No, that's one of those things. The power cord is one of those things where when it's gone, you suddenly realize the disproportionate influence and importance it has in your life. Where you say, my God, without this power cord, nothing works. Nothing here. I mean, you know, it's unbelievable. All right. We should let's do this because we got so massively over time. We've been on the air for like an hour. And now that we've actually done the what's coming up today, several of the things that were coming up we've already done. So yeah. I'll skip those. We were going to talk to Aaron Mesh. Bam, already done that. Coming up later on today, top five. The top five songs with a rock and roll scream. That's a listener-created top five. That's listener Jeff in Tualatin. Listener Jeff has created the top five rock and roll screams. We'll get to that. We have another installment of Pop Culture Authority. Today's Pop Culture Authority answers the magical question, what's the deal with tentacle porn? What is up with that? So if you've ever asked yourself, why always the groping and the tentacling and the rubbery and the blah, 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 blah.
And who hasn't?
And I have, actually. Here's the thing about Pop Culture Authority. This is just a bit that I think it made up just so I could answer crap that I myself, as motivation to look up stuff I've always wondered. So today, what is up with tentacle porn? That is the question we'll answer with Pop Culture Authority. Don Taylor is working on stories including but not limited to the following.
Ringo Starr celebrates his 70th birthday. A woman, 66, gives birth to triplets. And Lindsay Lohan goes to jail.
Oh, fantastic.
Plus, we have a Darwin Watch and a Geek Watch.
All right. Well, let's do the Pop Culture Authority. We'll come back and go right to the news desk. That Lindsay Lohan, and I've got great sound on that. And I've got some terrible sound from yet another. They've done like 100 benefits for this. Never mind. We'll save it.
And we also have to discuss the word myriad.
Oh, the word myriad, because I wrote that down. We're starting a new segment today. We started this during Legion of News. Legion of News is the show that that Don and I do, which you ought to be listening to, from noon to one on PDX.fm. It's where – and we used to do some variation of this with the Rick Emerson Show, and it didn't really work. But we're trying it again, as I always do. It's a vain attempt to become more organized, where we take all the things from Legion of News – that I don't have time to get into, and we make them sort of hyperlinks, and then we expand like a message thread that's collapsed, and then we expand it in this show later on. So that is all on the way and so forth. So we return here in just a moment. Without further ado, here is today's installment of Pop Culture Authority. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program on the Emerson News Network. What is up with tentacle porn?
From the Emerson News Network. This is Pop Culture Authority.
I'm Rick Emerson. It has become, for many people, just one of those things. The French love Jerry Lewis, Hawaiians love spam, and the Japanese love erotica that seems to fixate on the violation of women by various kinds of tentacled sea beasts. So widely has this phenomenon come to be known that it's made an appearance on no less a program than Mad Men, whose character of Bert Cooper has on his office wall a print of The Dream of the Fisherman's Wife, which depicts a woman engaged in sexual congress with not one but two of the aforementioned creatures. Dream of the Fisherman's Wife, drawn in 1814 by Katsushika Hokusai, is generally considered the first widely disseminated example of tentacle erotica, though wood carvings and other small sculptures showing similar encounters have been dated to the mid-17th century. Whence does it all derive, however? According to historian Laura Miller, consensus points to the legend of Princess Tamatori, developed around the historical figure Fujiwara no Kamatari, who was the founder of the powerful Fujiwara clan. In the tale, which takes place somewhere between 614 and 669 AD, Tamatori must reclaim a stolen pearl from a dragon king who lives underwater. Upon reclaiming the treasure, she came under pursuit by sea creatures who were the dragon's guards. Most historical depictions of the story show at least some level of mutual enjoyment between Tamatori and her pursuers. In the modern age, tentacle porn was repopularized by Demon Beast Invasion, a manga series written and illustrated by Toshio Maeda, in which women were routinely, well, penetrated by all manner of tentacles and rubbery appendages. Maeda, for his part, says he was merely trying to get around the strict, if somewhat bizarre and seemingly pointless, Japanese pornography laws, which prohibit the depiction of a penis in terms of intercourse. So, there you go. From cultural folklore to fabled artwork to a way to get around the man, tentacle porn has a long and storied history in Japan. I have no way to end this piece, so I'll simply say, good God.
The final word on the only knowledge that matters. Pop Culture Authority from the Emerson News Network.
Rick Emerson radio program. I called up my friend Leroy on the phone. Thank you for joining us on this Wednesday.
I said, buddy, I'm afraid to be alone. Cause I got some weird ideas in my head about things to do in Denver when you're dead.
It is 503-505-6964. Will you please give your attention to Don Taylor at the news desk?
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Ringo Starr celebrates his 70th birthday today. He also has a new CD, Live at the Greek Theater 2008, which is out on the 27th. And he's embarked on a new tour with his all-star band. Starr says he supports all sorts of musicians, Megadeth, Lady Gaga, blah, blah, blah. Do you have...
Wait, what?
He doesn't say blah, blah, blah.
Did he say Megadeth?
What is he talking about?
He said,
when it comes to modern day musicians, Starr said he is in favor of them all. It could be Megadeth or Lady Gaga and Elton John thrown in the middle.
Okay, it's what we do. I got that there. I guess I was sort of confused.
He's Ringo Starr. He doesn't have to make sense.
I was confused.
And he's 70.
I was confused there for a second because it it sounded as though he was sort of supporting them, as in like drumming behind them. You know, I'll be drumming behind the lads in Megadeth later on.
He cuts some checks.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. I got numerous Ringo Starr cuts here. I think there's one of these is him talking about his. I've got Ringo Starr talking about advice. Got him talking about his legacy. And got him talking about peace and love. Which would you like to hear first?
Oh, peace and love.
All right. Here's Ringo Starr talking about peace and love.
At 12 noon, wherever you are, I just want you to put your fingers up and say peace and love. And that's your gift to me. Peace and love.
Well, I've already missed that.
Yeah,
so
we missed that.
Next year, maybe. All right. Now, there you go. Did you see that thing that he did last, it would have been last year, maybe, where, I guess it might have been Christmas time, where he put out basically a big press release saying, hey, by the way, from now on, I'm not going to sign anything. I'm not going to autograph anything. You send it to me, I'm going to burn it.
I remember that.
It was awesome. Because you know those guys, I mean, look, you know, I appreciate that, you know, the fans feel like, you know, it's nice, a nice gesture for him to sign, but he's a Beatle. It's not like he's just some dick who is on Melrose Place. He's a Beatle. One of the only two left. I mean, he's really, and that's the thing, is not to be morbid, but probably he gets way more than he used to because, you know, you can't split that mail up four ways now. So he just said, look, I'm going to sign things to the end of the year, and then after that, it's just going into the furnace. And he just said that. He literally said, if you send me anything after, I think it was December 31st, 2009, so if you send me anything else, it's just going to go into the rubbish bin and it's going to be burned, which is sort of a great zero-tolerance kind of way. So there you go. So let's see. Here's Ringo Starr talking about his legacy.
The Beatles, you know, the biggest band in the land, and still recognize, you know, the work they did as musicians and writers. It's still as powerful as it was.
I wonder if, this is a dumb question, I wonder if Ringo Starr gets tired of talking about the Beatles. But then again, how could you? I mean, I just don't know the answer to that. I wonder if, because, you know, like, I'll put it this way. Have you, like, you've probably done this, Don. You've interviewed your share of directors or actors or whatever. Have you ever interviewed somebody, and if so, you have to reveal who. Have you ever interviewed somebody where they were pushing some project, but the thing you cared about was like 30 years ago? The thing that everybody cared about was 30 years ago. And they know, and you know, and everyone knows that you're letting them pimp their new project, so you can say, yeah, that's really great. That's fantastic. Tell me about when you start on the Bugaloos, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, I interviewed Joe Pantoliano.
Oh, well, there you go.
And it was the reason that I got the interview was because there was a brand new reissue for the anniversary of Risky Business.
Right.
And so I was like really excited to talk to him about Risky Business, The Sopranos. I had so many things to talk to him about. All he wanted to talk about was his brand new mental health thing he's that he just started.
Because he's all with the bipolar, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he started this really great organization called No Kidding Me Too. But the thing is, you know, I wanted to talk about this other stuff, and all he wanted to talk about was like taking Prozac and and how it's perfectly cool to have depression and bipolar illness. And I was like, yes, but you were Guido the Killer Pimp. Yeah, that's what I want to talk about.
Yeah, no, I was told by – well, I've had two instances. I think I've mentioned that when I interviewed J.J. Walker, you could have seen this coming years ago, his people – and it's amazing that J.J. Walker actually can afford to have people unless it was like just his cousin. But it said that, you know, Mr. Walker, they informed us, said, Mr. Walker will not discuss good times. He won't say dynamite. Don't ask him to say dynamite. He's not going to talk about any. He was like pitching some – he had like a diet book or something, something absurd. And they said, but don't ask him anything else. Or and they told us, they're like, we have a kill switch. We'll hang up the phone. We'll end the interview. And I just finally said, well, you tell him to have a good day. And then I said, howdy. And we just opted not to do the interview. When I interviewed Peter Criss from Kiss, it was the same thing. And because this was last year – and I have to give it up to give it up to Scotty J, who actually made this happen. His the one time during the day when that stop clock was right, he got Peter Criss on. But this is Peter Criss had already left Kiss, rejoined for the reunion, done a couple tours, and had left again, and had been replaced by Eric Singer in Peter Criss makeup, which has got to be a weird experience. But so he had already left again, and you know, things with Kiss never end well; they always end badly. So he was kind of on the downward cycle again, but he put out a new record, which is for a select audience, I would say. And but his interview prepper kept telling us, like, don't ask him about Kiss. And I was like, are you effing kidding me?
Come on.
And I didn't say that. Scotty said, no problem. I'll make sure that Rick stays on track. you know, it's totally what I told him. I said, just lie. I said, just lie. Just tell him whatever. I said, you tell them whatever you need to tell them to get him on the phone, because in my experience, the handler is always the problem. It's never the artist. The artist is usually like the artist knows the deal. If they're successful, if they've had any kind of career, they know what they got to pay the rent, and they know what the people show up to hear. It's the handler that has a vested interest in the new project being a big success. So I'm like, you just lie, just say whatever it takes, and then I'll just ask him whatever I want to ask him. So he came on and I let him pimp his record. That's the other thing I learned when you're interviewing somebody. You let them – you make the first three questions about the new thing that nobody cares about, because then they've done their job, you've done your job, the publicist relaxes, and then you can go, tell me about being in Kiss, which he did, and it was freaking fantastic. I mean, it was awesome. But you're doing that whole thing of like, no, that's really great, Mark Hamill. Tell me more about your comic book, The Black Pearl. I don't care. That's awesome.
Have you ever had the thing in an interview where you said something to the person that you thought would be amusing? You'd bring up something that was maybe one of their lesser things they've done, and you discovered immediately from the tone of their voice that they have like no sense of humor about them all.
Yeah.
And then you're just kind of you're in this awkward kicking yourself thing.
Maybe I'll find this. I'll play this tomorrow. Maybe if I can dig it up. Why were we talking about this?
Because we're talking about Ringo Starr.
Ringo Starr. Thank you. See. There you go. That's why this show, years ago I did a failed. I've done many failed. I've done actually, really when you think about it, every version has failed at some point. I mean, eventually. just some last longer than others. Anyway, I'll tell you about a thing later. Remind me to tell you about answering 10 questions.
I'll just say Bruce Campbell, I found out, has no sense of humor about McHale's Navy.
Really?
Yeah.
You think
none
he would
whatsoever.
Have to. How could he sign up to do that movie and not have a sense of humor about it? That makes no sense.
I was actually surprised when I interviewed him, as nice as he was to me, to discover that a lot of his persona is really what he's like. He really does take himself far more seriously than you'd think.
He's one of those guys that, you know, is, and I'm not trying to knock Bruce Campbell, but he's one of those guys that I think does view himself as a serious actor and probably is frustrated a little bit by the fact that he's just, you know, he's ash to everybody. And, you know, and he probably is just sort of like, you know, I can really act. Well, you know who struggled with that forever was John Belushi, who, and people don't, you know, and it's not like I'm some authority on him. But, I mean, by all accounts, he was a really very talented actor that never, ever got a chance to show because he was immediately Bluto from Animal House, like, forever.
What's the name of the film he made with Blair Brown?
Continental Divide?
Continental Divide is awesome.
Yeah.
He is so good in that.
He was really a good actor, but it just but immediately they were like, you are this one thing forever. My example of this, though, and maybe I'll dig this up for tomorrow. When I interviewed Kiefer Sutherland, Sarah and I interviewed Kiefer Sutherland because he was coming through town, and it ended up being a really good interview. Like, in other words, the thing he was promoting that you think would just be a throwaway was actually pretty interesting. It was him and a guy named Jude Cole, who was sort of an alternative rock guy in the early 90s. He had a few hits. He had a hit called, I think his song was called Start the Car. I think it was his song. But anyway, they started a record label, and they have this band called Billy Boy and Poison. Terrible name for a band. Not a bad band. Kind of a White Stripes sort of thing. So that was, you know, we talked about music, and that was great. Everybody expected me to be, like, trying to weasel in 24 questions. Here's the thing. I don't care about 24. I watched the first season and quit watching it. I'm sure it's a fine show. It's just not a thing I watch. So, therefore, not interesting to me. Not interesting. But what I wanted to talk to Kiefer Sutherland about, in addition to Stand By Me and Lost Boys, I asked some Lost Boys questions. All I wanted to ask him about was this movie he did with Keanu Reeves in 1985 called Brotherhood of Justice. And I was the only person in the room other than Kiefer Sutherland who knew what Brotherhood of Justice was. And Sarah was like, so tell me about Lost Boys. Did those contact lenses hurt when you put them in your eye? And, you know, did they approach you about the Lost Boys sequel? And what about 20, you know, and whatever? And I'm like, that's great, Sarah Dillon. Hey, Kiefer Sutherland, Brotherhood of Justice with Keanu Reeves. What was it like? And he actually, and it was that thing where he kind of looked at me for a second like he was trying to figure out if I had been put up to it, or if I had just, like, Googled him quickly and gone to Wikipedia and, like, oh, what can I reference that's obscure? Like, he thought maybe I was pulling his leg, like I didn't really know it. And I said, you know, Brotherhood of Justice, you and Keanu Reeves, and you're a vigilante group, and you have that great scene where you go, they hit us, and we hit back, and they hit back harder. What's it all about? And it quickly became clear that I knew way more about the movie than he did, and that he did not want to talk about it. And he just said, and he did that thing of, like, looking down at his fingers as though he was sort of, like, polishing his fingernails or something. Like, he was sort of fiddling with something, but there was nothing there. And he went, yeah, that was a movie I did a long time ago. Silence. And that was it. And it was clear that that was just sort of, that was the longest we were going to get. That was the further we were going to get down that road. So, Ringo Starr, do we have one more cut from him? I think we do. This is Ringo Starr talking. This is his advice, presumably for people.
You must love what you're doing. And it's not for the fame. It's for the love of your instrument, of your writing, of your performance.
Really? Is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
That's 70 years and that's what he has for me? Well, he's going to burn my letters. I suppose I should be happy he's talking to me at all.
Yeah, when you're a multimillionaire, it's all very easy to say that you have to do something that you love.
Well, you know, but the thing about that guy is, Ringo Starr, is that he's a guy that has no illusions about his life, because there's that famous quote where somebody said, you know, well, what is it, you know, what did you feel like, you know, in the Beatles, you know, what was it like when Beatlemania first hit? And he said, oh, I felt like the lad who won the pools, you know? I mean, that's a guy who realizes that he won the lottery in some way. I'm not saying he's not talented. You know, if you're some guy out there clutching, a passel of, like, Emerson, Lake, and Palmer albums, you know, you probably have something sneery to say about Ringo Starr. But, you know, for the Beatles, he's the perfect drummer for that band. I'll put it that way. Ringo Starr is a great drummer for that band and an underrated drummer in some ways in terms of timing and feel. But at the same time, it's not like he was the driving musical force. So he realizes that, you know, there, but for the grace of George Martin going, oh, that Pete Best guy sucks. Get rid of him. You know, that Ringo would still be touring with some version of Rory and the Hurricanes like 50 years later, you know? And nobody wants that. So have you seen his all-star band when they tour? They are, man, that's...
I saw them on something. I haven't actually seen them live. But
that is one of those things that could very easily be just boring or sad or pathetic, but it's fantastic. When I saw it, because it is just what it sounds like. It is like a throwback to the sort of the package tours, the way they used to be before Perry Farrell decided that we were all going to pay $170 to stand in a misting tent, where it's Ringo Starr, and then he gets literally an all-star band, you know, famous guitarist, famous bass player, famous rhythm guitar, and he's Ringo Starr, so he can. He just calls him and goes, it's a Beatle, get on the phone, you know. Now get on the plane. Now stand on stage. And then they go around the room, basically, on stage, and everybody takes a turn, like, playing the two songs that made them famous. And it's just awesome. I saw him one year with Joe Walsh as part of the band. It was, like, Joe Walsh and, like, maybe Peter Frampton, actually, and, it wasn't Peter Noon, but it was some guy. It was, like, one of the, like, Eric Burden or somebody from the Animals. And then everybody, like, sang their two songs, and it wasn't, like, a cover band. It was, like, the greatest cover band you've ever seen in your life. And they did, like, nothing but songs you wanted to hear. It was fantastic. So Rick Emerson endorses that.
Okay. We've been talking about this for way too long. We need
Says
to
you.
We need to move on to other stories. We have so much stuff.
I know. And it's like 5 o'clock or something already. All right. What are we doing here?
Well, we have the Lohan story.
Fantastic. All right. So, by the way, we should say coming up later on, we got Darwin Watch coming up today. Geek Watch still on the way. Top five, a listener-created top five, the top five screams in a rock and roll song. That's on the way as well. And don't forget, the Rick Emerson live stream now goes, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, except for that awkward moment right before the show every day when I have to disconnect everyone. But when we wrap up today, the stream continues 24/7. Here's Dawn Taylor.
Actress Lindsay Lohan was ordered yesterday to serve 90 days in jail for missing alcohol counseling sessions in violation of her probation.
Wah, wah.
The judge also ordered Lohan to spend 90 days in a drug and alcohol rehab program after her jail term is completed. She has to begin serving her sentence on July 20th. It was ruled that she violated her probation in a 2007 drunken driving conviction by missing weekly alcohol counseling sessions. And this would be a little sound we have here, a little audio.
Excellent.
Of Lindsay trying to explain herself and missing the sessions and such.
Oh, I'm sorry. Your computer's off. That's my fault. All right.
There we go.
I take responsibility for my actions, and I've tried to do the best I can in the past few weeks since I was here last, which is the only time I've been, present in front of a judge in any of my situations in terms of this specific case. It's the only time.
In terms of this one.
And honestly, it did wake me up. Yes, of course it scared me. And it also confused me because I was there thinking that it was okay that I missed those classes. I thought, and I didn't.
That's what you should always say.
Differently. Again, like I said, I would have taken it, I would have made sure that I was in town each week, and I would have balanced my work around that because I'd rather, be working in the long run, after all, than dealing with this kind of thing for the rest of my life.
Oh, it's impossible to overstate how irritating she is.
And, and the working. It's about the working. She missed the sessions because of the working. Like going to Cannes for the film festival.
God damn.
Because she has a film in the film festival? I don't think so. Are they showing the Herbie movies at the Cannes Film Festival?
Well, and I have to say, normally a chick crying is kind of hot. But in this case, it's just, first of all, there's a lot of mucus going on there, which I find to be really off-putting. Also, she sounds like she's about 9 years old, but has like a serious chain-smoking habit.
Well, it sounds like that sort of fake thing that... kind of fake but hysterical thing you do when you're a teenager.
Almost like...
And you've been caught doing something that you knew was wrong when you did it, but now you're in trouble, so you're like standing there in front of your parents going, but I didn't know I wasn't allowed to drive the car after 1 o'clock in the morning to the mall. I thought, I didn't know I wasn't allowed to park like in the bushes after drinking beer. You never said.
It's almost like she's an actress and she's just playing some sort of a role that she thinks will get her something. And when she actually says at one point, well, I thought that I didn't have to go to those classes. That's the first thing you want to say, is that you weren't really listening like the last 7 times he was in, he had you in court and he was telling you what you had to do. Well, I wasn't really, if only I hadn't been so drunk, I might have been writing down those dates, Your Honor, but I am sorry. I was the Percocet made it difficult to hold the pen. You got to give me a break. So, F you. All right. So she's going to prison to jail for how long?
She's sentenced for 90 days. They're saying she will probably only serve about 23.
And when does
but
that
then
start?
She's supposed to go into rehab for 90 days.
But she's in jail now?
No. That's what they were saying was that she was told.
I was promised that they would take her into custody immediately.
That's what they said. And no. Now she hasn't told the 20th to... I don't know.
What is wrong with this fading republic of ours?
What does she need time to get ready for?
I don't know. I really just to try to figure out a way to appropriately line one of her orifices so that the drugs she will undoubtedly try to smuggle in don't poison her upon entering the prison. I mean, that's the only thing I can think of. I mean, really, what affairs do you have to get in order? You're not doing anything. God damn. And I think in Legion of News, you had that story about how, was it Lindsay or her mom that had the phrase F you written on one of her fingernails?
Oh, that was Lindsay. That's Lindsay.
She's a class act.
You have the picture over there somewhere. But she painted F you on her middle finger. And then, of course, the photographers have,
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I hit the wrong.
Hello?
Oh, damn it. There we go. Sorry.
Photographers have, cameras.
Yeah.
In the courtroom.
It's just one of her, it's her middle finger on her left hand because she's clever, and it says F you. And with a telephoto lens, they were able to, let me just read, in case you haven't heard this, just one little bit, this is fascinating. We had this in Legion of News, which airs from noon to one every day, which you ought to be listening to. While Dina Loewen, who is just a contemptible waste of skin, I mean, just taking up air that could be used by somebody else.
Well, both of her parents are just horrible.
While Dina Loewen labeled her daughter's 90-day jail sentence as so not fair. Pictures making the round show Lindsay Loewen herself had a couple choice words for the judge, as she had a multicolored message painted with care on at least one of her fingernails, yes, the words F-U, made visible thanks to photographer's telephoto lenses. The strict jail sentence came as a surprise to Lindsay Loewen, her attorney, and her mother, who expressed her outrage. "This is so not fair to do this to my only child," says a flabbergasted Dina Loewen, who ought to be horsewhipped. She told celebrity gossip website Pop Eater shortly after judge... I don't even care enough to read the rest of this. So, there you go. There ought to be something. You know what they ought to do? They ought to just, because there's always the thing of you're like, well, where do we go wrong as parents? It's our fault. They ought to just put one of those, like, what is that movie with Jean-Claude Van Damme where they put the explosive collar around his neck? You know what I'm talking about? Is that a Van Damme movie or is it something else? And if he gets more than 50 feet away from the other guy, it explodes. What movie am I thinking of?
I have no idea.
I'm just thinking they ought to put one on Dina Loewen and then just blow it up.
I thought...
Don't actually make her... Just put it on her and then just explode her right away.
I thought that they... I thought there was another kid. Isn't there? I thought...
No, there's Lacey Loewen or Lonnie Loewen or...
Yeah, I thought
Lulu
there was
Loewen or
another one.
I don't know. I got
apparently now they drowned that one or something because now Lindsay's the only one they've got left.
I figured. Look, it's just too much. It's too much effort. It's like that. It's like a missile command when eventually you just have to let the other two bases go and just put all your effort into defending the middle one.
Are you thinking of Battle Royale?
Maybe
with the collars and the explosions.
It might be. And really, I had no second act for that suggestion. When I said you got to put one of the explosive collars on Dina Loewen, and then blow it up. That's it. I don't even have the middle act for that. I go right to the denouement. Here is Don Taylor.
We have a Darwin watch.
The best part is, here's what happened right now, is I have asked Dawn, we've had this conversation where I've said, because the sound, by the way, let's just acknowledge that the sound has run really flawlessly for the most part the last week or so. In terms of the watches and the sound cuts and the news cuts, I mean, it's come a long way when I'm not accidentally turning your microphone off. I have one computer screen in front of me. We got like 9 computers, but there's only one in front of me with the sound. And there's only so many things I can have up at one time. So I asked Don, I said, so will you just do me a favor, hold up the news story a few seconds in advance so that I know a watch is coming so I can get ready to play the sounder. And so what you did just now is you actually showed it to me as you were saying it.
I said it very slowly.
Rick, we have a Darwin watch, as though that's supposed to give me any time. To get the noise. Okay, are we ready?
I think you covered it flawlessly, though.
All right. What are we doing now, Don?
A Darwin watch.
Here's your Darwin watch. Thank you. For Wednesday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
I have a feeling some bad stuff is about to go down.
Don't!
I ate all my caps.
Don't!
My parents won't let me use scissors.
Don't!
number one bites the dust.
Oh, my heart just stopped. Ah, there it goes.
Here's your Darwin Watch for Wednesday.
A Texas truck driver died when he jumped from his moving vehicle while staging a fake crash to collect insurance money.
Was it really a fake crash at that point?
Police said the 26-year-old man died of head injuries when he leaped from the moving truck before it jumped the curb and smashed into a freeway bridge support around 2 a.m. near downtown Houston.
Awesome.
His business partner, who was following the truck, told investigators the victim jumped out of it as part of a plan to wreck the vehicle and collect insurance money. The man said the truck was traveling about 50 miles per hour when it struck the curb, then hit the bridge support. He said he managed to park his vehicle, run after the truck as it slowly rolled down the street, climb up to the wheel, and stop it himself.
Oh, man.
Houston police detectives are investigating the trucker's death.
That is so fantastic. The only thing that would have made this better is if it had been filming it somehow. I mean, that's great. And that he was trying to do it to defraud someone.
Yes.
You know? That is instant karma is going to get you. It's going to smack you right in the face and the head and the spine and the heart and the blood. That's great. I love the idea that he had a business partner. When they say business partner, I wonder if it means like it was a guy that worked at the print shop with him or if it was like a partner in this business venture of defrauding the company by staging a fake accident. Here's just a little comedy test. What's the funniest phrase in that story? There's no definitive answer, but I wonder if you and I picked the same phrase and you read it out loud. There's one phrase there that you read that leapt off the page as being particularly funny.
Which worked for you?
You should guess.
Oh, leaped from the moving truck? No, I don't know.
There's that. No, it was as the truck rolled slowly down the hill.
That's right.
Because then that's just sort of a sort of a thing.
And you can see it in your mind so perfectly, too. This guy
exactly.
Running after the truck,
no.
And it's slowing down. You wonder, at what point did he realize that this just hadn't worked out the way they had planned?
I like to think that there was a long second there, you know, with sort of a, crap. I've made a huge mistake. All right, there you go. There's your Darwin Watch for Wednesday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. I love this show.
Another one bites the dust. Another one bites the dust. And another one gone. And another one gone. Another one bites the dust. Hey.
Fantastic. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. I keep meaning to find out if that spells something bawdy on the telephone. I haven't done that yet. Let's forget I said that. I'll do it tomorrow. It's 503-505-6964. Coming up later on, we have the top five today. Top five songs with a rock and roll scream, as suggested by listener Jeff of Tualatin. Let's go back to the news desk with Dawn Taylor.
But Terry Devi, 66, wanted to be a mother all her life. And now she finally is. Devi, who is now thought to hold the title for the oldest mother of triplets in the world, gave birth after undergoing in vitro fertilization treatments at a well-known fertility center in India. How soon Devi and her husband of 44 years will be able to take their children home is yet to be determined. The health of the two boys and one girl remains precarious. At only 2 pounds, 6 ounces, 2 pounds, 4 ounces, and 1 pound, 7 ounces.
1 pound,
they
7 ounces.
They are seriously underweight and are being monitored in the intensive care unit of the National Fertility Center in the Indian state of Haryana.
Now I've got some sound on this here, and I'm going to try to find the raw, sort of uncut version of this, so we can sort of.
Teddy Devi is sleep deprived and sore, and for good reason.
That's why, because I want to be able to pause it after a phrase like she's sleep deprived and sore
for good reason.
Yeah, I mean, really, if you've thought about having kids, you need to rethink that. All right, so this is this woman they talked about in India. How many? She just had triplets.
Triplets.
She's how old?
66.
Well done.
But Teddy Devi is sleep deprived and sore, and for good reason. She's just given birth to triplets at age 66.
Why did you decide to have babies now at 66 years old?
Obviously, it was very difficult to carry these babies, but we have to grow our family. That's why I had kids.
Yes, because India is really short on people. That's an underpopulated place. They're just you just walk through India for days and days and never see a single soul.
Her 70-year-old husband said they needed heirs to take over their land someday. The couple was unable to conceive until 8 months ago when they found this fertility clinic.
I was confident that she would carry on with the pregnancy.
Dr. Anurag Bishnoi implanted embryos in Devi's uterus using a young woman's egg fertilized by Devi's husband's sperm.
This is just so gross. Look, it's not like I'm horrified by the act of reproduction. The whole fertilizing of eggs and implanting is just, I'm not saying it's wrong, it's like it's immoral or I'm bothered by it. It's just gross sounding. I think the whole egg thing is what weirds me out.
Well, and her husband is 70, she's 66.
They're going to be dead in like a year.
I know, when their kids inherit, you know, the family farm, they'll be four.
Yeah, that's great. Your kid inherited a house he can teethe on. Well done.
The procedure failed twice, but finally worked when Dr. Bishnoi implanted three embryos at once.
You said yourself that this can be pretty dangerous for someone of that age. Why are you doing this? Some people might criticize you for
doing it
to someone this old.
Yes.
Smart people.
By the way, that's a thing, and I'm fairly certain this is one of those stories that is great on two levels. I mean, there's the story itself, and then there's the way that it's being reported by the newscastress, whoever she is. That is a thing. I mean, you follow the media as closely as I do, and you dislike most people, as I do. When did the phrase, well, some people might say, start creeping its way into journalism as a way for just the journalist or the reporter themselves to say, look, here's what I think, and here's what everybody thinks, frankly. They all think you're a nutcase. When did that, that seems like a fairly recent development, isn't it?
That is lazy journalism. I mean, if you're, I did most of my journalism in newspapers, and you have a little bit more space to work with. But, you know, you do that by, you get the other point of view by finding someone to interview that has that other point of view and quoting them.
Like an actual person, not some like figurative person somewhere.
Yeah, because honestly, if you did that in print, if you said, well, some people say, you know, the immediate thing when you're reading it too is to go, what people? Yeah. What people are saying that?
Some people somewhere say that you're a Nazi.
Go on an aeroplane, it can crash.
Do you ever hear an accent that you know is real, but because you grew up in America, you automatically think it's fake?
It's very dangerous to ride a bike. You can always bash, or someone may bash into your motorcycle. But people do it. Why? Because they want to reach their destination.
So this is his comparison. That's why I have the whole story, because it's chock full of goodness. She asks him about the danger involved in a 66-year-old woman who has had failed pregnancy before shoving a bunch of things out of her body.
On an aeroplane.
And she says,
people,
you know,
people might criticize you for doing it to someone this old.
Yes. It's very dangerous to go on an aeroplane. It can crash. And it's very dangerous to ride a bike. You can always bash, or someone may bash into your motorcycle. But people do it. Why? Because they want to reach their destinations. Same are these cases?
It's exactly the same.
It's
There's no difference
like
at
that.
All. In no way are those situations different, and in no way is there any sort of disparity between the two scenarios, Don.
It's
don't
nothing
judge.
Like that at all.
Let me just run this just a little bit longer, because I think we'll get one more some people say here.
Dr. Bishnoi says he's perfectly comfortable impregnating a 66-year-old woman or older, but...
Which makes it sound, by the way, like he's just putting her in the stirrups and going to town.
There are critics. Would you be okay with that?
Definitely no, I wouldn't.
Dr. Sohani Verma runs the
the unborn baby.
Dr. Bishnoi is undeterred.
As a doctor, I cannot say no if the patient is medically fit.
He's just a doc who can't say no.
He boasts he's helped more than 100 women over the age of 50 conceive. He proudly displays articles written about his eldest patients.
Some might say this is insane that you're just doing this.
Some might say this is insane that you are a lunatic who ought to be taken and electrocuted out back.
Well, yeah, this fertility center, yes, they're responsible for the pregnancy of women over 50, including one who has who was thought to be the world's oldest mother, who's 72. She has an 18-month-old daughter with the woman's husband, who is 73. It's impossible to actually verify her specific age because they don't have birth certificates.
Wow.
But they're in their early 70s, and the woman is weak from the removal of a large ovarian cyst. And because she's 72, She says she fears she's dying. She's bedridden and too weak to lift her child. Good job with the fertility clinic.
You're just nitpicking, Dawn. You know, it's
excellent
dangerous
job
to get on a subway. It's dangerous to use a pogo stick, Dawn. Why do you have to hate? All right, it's the Rick Emerson radio program. I'll tell you, we'll do a little thing here. We'll come back. And actually, Greg and Sarah taped this morning, so we can run a little long today if we have to. Although you need to go do ham-fisted radio over at pdx.fm,
don't
you?
I do. So, but I don't have to be there till 3:45, so we've got a little extra time. I got a little leeway.
That's all right. That's the right answer. That was a test just there. All right. It wasn't really a test. That was just me forgetting it was Wednesday I'm trying to cover. we'll do this, take a little break, so that everyone may, you know, get up and walk around the cabin. And come back, we'll do the top five, a couple more news stories, and we'll wrap it up. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. We had somebody request this. Her name is? Nah, it's
Sheila.
No, it's not Sheila.
Betty.
It's, no, stop. It's
Karen.
Maybe? No, it is Karen. No, it's not. Here we go. It is Marty. Marty, who I believe is a woman from the spelling, says, what is the name of the song you played Wednesday, last Wednesday? She said it was about obituary. She said it contained the line, N is for Nick, who died in the womb. That is a song called A Gory Demise by Creature Feature. And it's a it's not the same thing as, but it is obviously inspired by and meant to be an alternate version of a sort of poem called The Gashly Crumb Tinies by Edward Gorey, who many of you know as he does the opening credits for the show Mystery on PBS and has a lot of books and is creepy and whatever. And is not and when he
and
wrote,
altogether delightful
and altogether delightful. And as he wrote, and this was true at the time, as he wrote in the foreword to one of his anthologies in the 80s, he said, everyone thinks that I am from Britain and also dead. I am neither of these things. I say in a British accent for no reason. So there you go. That's so the song is called...
Was that one of the British accents you did on Leverage? Because that was very good.
Okay. Thanks so much. I'm just going to move on now and leave a little Miss Sarcasm here to work on the news for the next...
I can't tell.
See, but now I can never tell. I thought
I've been hearing that my whole life.
I thought you meant it, but it was pure nihilism.
I say nice things to people. I say nice shirt, and they go, "What? What's wrong with
no,
it?"
No, it's I'm
like,
it's... That's what I told my vocal coach. I think I told you this story. She said, "What can't you do?" And I go, "I can't sound sincere. I could cut my hand off in a printing press of some kind. It could just be lopped off at the wrist." And I go, "Ow! He doesn't mean that." All right. Well, thank you. Maybe I'll do that accent the next time they call me in for leverage. I'll do everything as my version of Edward Gorey.
Yeah.
Hello. How are you today? All right. This is called A Gory Demise by Creature Feature. This one's going out to Marty in the PDX. Thanks for listening. We'll come back after this with the top five and with more news from Dawn Taylor. You say there's the Rick Emerson Show on the Rick Emerson Radio Network.
All right, everybody, sit down, quiet down, listen up. I brought you all here to recite the annual obituaries. Like every year, we'll start with A and we'll end with Z. All right, is the band ready?
Ready.
All right, hit it, Boyles.
One and two.
Drown in a pool. B is for Billy, who is eaten by ghouls. C is for Kurt with disease of the brain. D is for Daniel Durrell on a train. E is for Eric, who's buried alive. F is for Frank, who was stabbed through the eye. G is for Greg, who died in the womb. H is for Heather, who was sealed in a tomb.
One by one, we bite the dust. Kick the bucket and begin to rust. Give up the ghost when the numbers up. We all fall down. We're ashes to ashes, bones to paste. You'll wither away in your resting place. Eternity in a wooden case. We all fall down.
I is for Isaac, who lost his front brakes. J is for Johnny, who was bitten by snakes. K is for Kimmy, who was shot in the head. L is for Larry, who bled and bled. N is for Marie, who was burned to a crisp. N is for Nick, who was pummeled by fists. O is for Olive, who lived like too fast. P is for Pat, who swallowed some glass.
Give up
up the coast when your number's up. We all fall down. We're ashes to ashes, bones to paste. You'll wither away in your resting place. Eternity in a wooden case. We all fall down.
Q is for Quentin, who took the wrong trail. R is for Raider, who rotted in jail. S is for Steve, who was shot with a bow. T is for Tori, who froze in the snow. U is for York, who's trampled by hooves. V is for Vanessa, who fell off a roof. W is for Will, who was hit by a car. X is for Xavier, who sunk in the tar. Y is for Yessie, who fell from a plane. Z is for Zach, who simply went insane.
4, 3, 2, 1, fire!
Counting is wonderful, counting is marvelous, counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness, counting is ecstasy, I love to count, don't you?
And I realize that some things never change. I've handed you a piece of paper on which the print could not possibly be smaller. It's like, yes, in 5-point type.
But I have my glasses, so I can read this.
And you can do that thing where you hold the paper really far away, right, from you. This is today's top five, suggested to us by Jeff in Tualatin. And by the way, because, you know, of course, if you're listening to the Rick Emerson Show, you are by definition, you know, you're subscribing and you're giving us your 32 cents a day, and God love you, and we appreciate it. You can also give a gift subscription if you like. And I'll say this once more when we get to the end of the show, but don't forget, the Rick Emerson Show is now live. Or the, you know, the stream anyway is live 24/7. The stream is live 24/7, so you can be listening to us you know, essentially around the clock. But if you got an idea, suggestion, whatever for a top five, you feel free to send it our way. So send your top fives on in, kids. Don Taylor, what is today's top five?
Well, it is the
top five rock and roll screams.
Yes, top five rock and roll screams.
All right.
Honorable mention: Janis Joplin, Another Piece of My Heart.
And I have to say, by the way, this is not my top five. I didn't pick these songs. I agree with some of them. I detest Janis Joplin, but what are you going to do?
Why do you detest Janis Joplin?
She looks like she smells, for one thing.
Well,
I know. I'm just, you know. This is what he's talking about. Oh, no, I'm sorry. We're leading up to the big scream. I've kind of edited these around to the actual point. Here's my thing about Janis Joplin. Janis Joplin, to me, is like Stevie Ray Vaughan, in that she gets a disproportionate amount of credit because she gets a disproportionate amount of credit for being white. In other words, I've seen a billion blues guitarists who, yeah, play as well as, if not better than, Stevie Ray Vaughan, but because he was a white guy, he was touched by genius. And it's like a jillion guys who do that, but he's white, so therefore more attention. There's a million blues shouters that do what Janis Joplin did, you know, to a much more interesting and effective degree. But because she's a white girl, of course, you know, no, she's a genius. Wait, I would be wrong if I didn't play the actual screaming part here.
I can see your point, but I like her. I like her.
One of the first 45s I ever had was Mercedes-Benz, so, I mean, there's that. Here we go.
You know you got it.
Seriously, I hate to sound like my own parents, but God damn it, just sounds like a cat being strangled. All right, there goes Janis. Sorry, Jeff. There's Janis Joplin. All right, the top five rock and roll screams. What might the next one be, Don Taylor?
Number five, Sam Kinison, Wild Thing.
Sam Kinison's version of Wild Thing from the Have You Seen Me Lately album. Now, I would have made this the honorable mention because it almost seems like cheating.
Well, yeah, because it's not really a rock and roll scream. It's a Sam Kinison scream.
That's the thing.
He did scream great.
He's a ringer. God, I miss Sam Kinison.
And you know she's out there laughing at you. I don't care if it was last week or third grade. Someone broke your heart. What was her name? Demon.
Amazingly, we're not at the actual Scream that put this on the list yet. And that's not it either.
His death and Bill Hicks' death are the two biggest tragedies in comedy.
I have at home the back when things used to be on paper. I have at home the AP Wire printout. Just the one line, because the newspapers, they give you the story as soon as they get, little bits at a time, as soon as they get a piece of information. And I have the one line bulletin printout that I tore off the AP Wire that says comedian Sam Kinison killed in an accident outside the Needles, I think is where it happened. So yeah, no, that was a bad. That was a bad. I saw him actually high-fived him like a couple weeks, about 2 weeks before that happened. Mm-hmm. I waited outside. I didn't get backstage or anything, but my friends and I were just, I was such a huge fan. I did the whole Almost Famous thing. I just waited outside the stage door. And he was getting out of the stage door, walking to get into a minivan. And my friends and I had just hung out by the stage door for like an hour, hoping he would, and he walked by it, and we were all, Sam! You know, and just, you know, idiots. And he came out, he did the high five, and he did the demon horns, and he said, "Freedom Fighters Unite!" Which means nothing, but it was awesome. And then he got into a van, he roared off, we're like, "That's so great." And it was like 2 weeks later, he got killed, and it just sucked. All right. Well, there you go. Life is for the living, kids. Is the top five rock and roll screams, according to listener Jeff in Tualatin.
Number four, Iron Maiden, The Number of the Beast.
Oh, earth and sea.
This is not the screaming part.
For the devil sends the beast with wrath.
Is that an eye roll?
Knows the time is short.
You went to a Ren fair. You are not allowed to roll your eyes at this. Oh, this is so much. This is so much less serious than. Than like a human chessboard, next to a lemonade stand. Sure, whatever.
Are they even comparable?
I left alone. My mind was blank. I needed time to think.
See, you've mocked this. That guy who texts you about Iron Maiden all the time, he'll find you and kill you.
What I saw that night was real and not just fantasy. Just what I saw in my old dreams were the reflections of my woman staring back at me. Cause in my dreams, it's always there. The evil face that twists my mind and brings me to despair.
Excellent. There you go. There's your daily dose of Iron Maiden. I sound like I'm on Z-Rock now. There's your mandatory Maiden for Wednesday. My name is Sharkbone, or whatever the hell. All right. Jesus. I'm actually conflating two real DJ names there. That's the retarded thing about that.
Sharkbone is a great DJ name.
I'll tell you about it someday. On the day that's not today. These are the top five rock and roll screams as compiled by listener Jeff in Tualatin.
Number three, Quiet Riot, Metal Health.
I like you, Jeff. You're a man after my own heart. Well done. Goddamn, I love Quiet Riot, and I'm unashamed of that. I won't deny that ever. Man, I am the owner of 9 Quiet Riot albums, I think. Albums the band themselves probably isn't aware of. I've seen them. I think I saw Quiet Riot. They were the reason I got a fake ID, by the way. Most guys get it to drink. I got a fake ID so I could see Quiet Riot at this horrible dirt hole bar called Gatsby's in Spokane.
Squander,
Mama says that I never
such a great song. This is one of the all-time albums of the hard rock genre. Boy, the worst hairpiece though in the history of rock. Did you ever see Kevin DeBrow's his rug?
I've seen photos of him.
It was like he was wearing a macrame plant hanger on his head. Bad. I don't know that I'd make this number three, but he's really one of rock's underrated screamers, one of rock's underrated vocalists, certainly hard rock underrated vocalist. I was really bummed out when Kevin DeBrow died. All right. These are the top five rock and roll screams from listener Jeff in Tualatin. Dawn Taylor.
Number two, The Beatles, Twist and Shout.
This whole song is one protracted scream.
Twist and shout. Come on, baby. Come on, baby. Come on and work it on out. Work it on out.
You know you twist a little girl.
Twist a little girl.
You know you twist so fine.
Twist so fine.
Come on and twist a little closer now.
Twist a little closer.
Let me know that you're mine.
It's hard to even say if this song is a scream or not. It's not really singing. It's not really screaming. It's like that Born in the USA thing where some... God, what a great song.
It is.
I mean, this is, you know, we've talked about definitive covers before where the cover outstrips the original in every way. And this is the quintessential example of that. It's like the best thing that's ever existed.
Every once in a while, you run across somebody who says that they don't like the Beatles, and I don't understand that. How can you not like the Beatles?
I don't. And it was a, you know, and somebody said something to me one time. It made a lot of sense actually. It was one of those things that's illogical, but you understand it. Where she said that she didn't remember the Beatles, but she missed them anyway, because because they're like an older brother that like died before you were born or something. But, you know, the thing about this is, and I've said many times that I would take this era of the Beatles over, like, the Strawberry Fields Forever era any day of the week. And songs like this are the reason why. By the way, just one, anybody who's asking, like, why are you paying 32 cents a day? It's so I can play that and you can hear it. That's why. Here is Dawn Taylor with number one.
Number one, The Who, Won't Get Fooled Again.
Looks like he's stuck between a rock and a dead place. Gah! There you go, Sam. I should have saved it and done it later. So, anyway, sitting here waiting for the song to get to the interesting part. Seen any good movies lately?
I am a fan of CSI, but they cut right to it on CSI.
Is this where I'm supposed to be meditating? I'm sorry. This isn't all that interesting.
Are we there yet?
No, I should say also that I'm, you said people who don't really like the Beatles, I don't really like The Who at all. I mean, I like Pete Townsend's songs. If only he could have just slid them under a door and had some other band perform them.
Wait, something's happening.
All right, closer. Maybe if I was high.
Great screen.
It's good. That's no Maiden.
Meet the new boss.
I don't even know what this line means.
Same as the old boss.
Everybody quotes that, and I've never really understood if he's talking about something in particular there. Is that a reference to...
It's philosophical. It means that, you know...
really? It's a think piece.
You're always working for the man, no matter where you are.
Well, that's true. All right. Except in this case, the man is you, the audience and listeners of the Rick Emerson Show. All right. So we want to thank our guest, Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. Don't forget, joining us later on in the week, we have guests including... he completely failed. Adam Roscoe from Trek in the Park. There we go. I almost forgot it. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill, our executive producer, Bruce Angler, and chief of staff, Cheryl Kanakoa. Don't forget, the Rick Emerson live stream now goes 24 hours a day. And the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by a generous grant from you. My name is Rick Emerson. This is Wednesday, July 7th, 2010, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, thank you all for listening. Be safe. See you tomorrow. Bye now.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.